This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. Back in July, we brought you a story about the spotted lanternfly, the invasive insect with spotted and red wings, the kind of bug that makes you say, "What the heck is that?" Well, since the story has aired, there have been some updates on just how far the lanternfly has spread. Joining me now is Sci-Fi producer Kathleen Davis, who suggested we talk about spotted lanternflies earlier this year. Hi, Kathleen.
Hey, Ira.
Now, if I remember correctly, back in July when you pitched the story, there was a personal reason for this, right?
Yes. So I was inspired to talk about this invasive bug because they had infested my neighborhood.
Infested your neighborhood?
They were everywhere. At the time, I was living in New Jersey, and it was so striking to me because I hadn't seen them before. And then suddenly they were everywhere. So I felt like I was seeing something scientifically important. Invasive species movement before my very eyes.
And speaking of movement, you've moved since we ran that story, right?
Yes. So I moved to Brooklyn, New York this summer, and unfortunately, so have the lanternflies. The headlines here in New York this summer have been all about why we've got to beat back this bug.
Did you kind of feel like they followed you to the big city?
Yeah, I did. But they didn't just move east. There was the story that came out of Kansas last month where a boy entered his bug collection at the Kansas State Fair, which triggered federal investigations. Can you guess why, Ira?
Let me guess. I'm going to guess it wasn't for stealing cotton candy.
No, no. The boy had a spotted lanternfly in his bug collection. And that really concerned people because the spotted lanternfly hadn't been found in Kansas before. Before that case, the furthest west an adult spotted lanternfly had been found was in Indiana.
Whoa. So I'm guessing you're thinking good time to rerun this story, right?
Yeah, because here's the thing. These bugs are a problem and they've got to go. We had one of the premier experts on lanternflies on the show. The message still applies. So let's remind our listeners why they're such a bummer and how we can get rid of them.
All right, let's do it. Thank you, Sci-Fi producer Kathleen Davis.
Thanks, Ira.
And now here is our memorable and important conversation from July about the spotted lanternfly featuring our expert, Dr. Julie Urban, associate research professor in entomology at Penn State University in State College, Pennsylvania. Let me rewind a bit so we can talk a bit about how the spotted lanternfly became an invasive species. Tell us about the origin story there.
Yes. So the origin story, actually, spotted lanternfly was an invasive that first occurred in South Korea in 2004. And so there it was reported to damage grapes, apples, stone fruit, and was a nuisance pest to residents. So we were all primed in the U.S. and looking for it anyway. And so it was first detected and reported to Pennsylvania Department of Agriculture September 22nd, 2014. So they knew immediately what this thing was, confirmed what it was, and reported it to USDA, and immediately action was taken. And so it was suspected from where it occurred and from how we know it got to South Korea and what we know about the biology of other lanternfly species is that essentially they'll lay their eggs on anything. They don't require a host plant that their offspring can feed upon to be a viable host for their eggs. And so we suspected they were transported in that egg mass state on a shipment of stone. So they were either laid on the stone itself that was shipped or on the pallet. And that's how they got here from their native range, which would be somewhere from China, Vietnam, Japan, or India.
So we're talking about tropical bugs, right? I mean, Pennsylvania is not really a tropical state. Well, now with the 90s we're having for the summer, I guess you could argue that. I mean, how is it that they're establishing themselves so well in the Northeast?
And here's where we get into some of the complexity of lanternfly. Lanternflies are a family of plant hoppers called Fulgoridae. There's 500 species, and largely most of them are tropical. That's what I study. But there are a few that occur in more temperate habitats, and spotted lanternfly, like Corma delicatula, is one of those. Its native range, you find it in Beijing, which is 40 degrees north latitude, which is the same as, you know, the north latitude of Philadelphia or New York City. So this is one of the very few lanternfly species that could get here. And it is able to survive these harsher temperatures, you know, winter temperatures, because it overwinters in its egg stage. Not all lanternflies do that. Other species do other things. So this is just one of the few outliers of this particular family.
And that's what makes them so good at spreading, is that they can survive.
Yes, that's one of the things. That's not the only thing.
Okay, what else makes them so good at spreading?
They're so good at spreading because they'll feed so broadly on such a huge range of host plants. They're sap feeders. So more specifically, they're phloem feeders. And they'll feed on essentially anything except for conifers. So they feed so broadly, so there's plenty of different host plants they can feed on. Their biology doesn't have to be honed in just the timing of any one plant. Because they're feeding on so many different things, they're broadly diffused across the habitat, so it's really hard to know when they're there, right? Because they're kind of spread out. And then the other thing about them is that while they like a lot of things, they really like one host plant in particular that also comes from their native range, Ailanthus altissima, or tree of heaven. That's an introduced invasive that's here in the United States. It persists throughout the United States, and it's generally found in highly disturbed habitats. So along railroad corridors and roadsides. You know, once you know what tree of heaven looks like or smells like, you're going to see it on the New Jersey Turnpike. You're going to see it everywhere.
Is that the one with the long, thin leaves?
Exactly.
Oh, I call them junk trees. They're everywhere.
It's the kid's book, A Tree Grows in Brooklyn, where the tree grows out of a crack in the sidewalk, right?
Right.
And so basically, because lanternfly are always moving around and their eggs are laid on anything, that lets them move along with Ailanthus along these corridors. And so that's also how they're able to spread.
And what makes them so bad? I mean, if there's so many of these trees around, what are they attacking that we don't like?
There's two answers to your question. The first, what are they doing? What are they attacking that we like? They're attacking grapes, right? They'll feed on different plants throughout their life cycle, but they'll feed on grapes throughout their whole life cycle, and they'll actually damage grapes. And so we've seen significant economic impact in actual vineyards. The only other tree that they'll actually kill is tree of heaven. Otherwise, they're just a stressor to other trees. They're not going to do a tree in and of itself. But the other way they're so damaging in terms of their direct impact is that they can move around, right? And so they can get into goods that have to be shipped, and we have quarantines, you know, for protection to prevent lanternfly from spreading. So the other place we're seeing economic impact is in the nursery industry. Because, you know, you can't ship nursery stock. These bugs will get into them, even if they're not feeding on those plants, like topiaries or conifers. They're not going to feed on them, but they'll certainly get into them. And they'll get into Christmas trees and lay their eggs on them. And so now we have these nurseries and Christmas tree growers who have to spend a lot of money to keep them out of their products before they transport them. But also anything else. You know, if you think about them getting here on stone, they can get on anything. So this is a significant impact to any kind of company that transports anything over state or international lines. But the other reason spotted lanternfly is so bad is because they evade our regular bag of tricks we have to control insects. So, you know, one of the things we often use to monitor insects is figure out what is their chemical cue, what is their pheromone that they use in mating, because then if we can use that, we can build a lure and build a trap, and we can use that for detection and trapping. Well, nobody's found a pheromone for spotted lanternfly. No plant hoppers known to use a pheromone, so I'm not too surprised. So we don't have a really good lure or way to trap them. And they're really voracious, so it's really hard to rear them in a lab. I mean, we have a colleague at USDA in particular, Tracy Leskey, who's doing a great job developing a colony. But basically, they live through one generation a year. You can't grow them in the lab, and it's really hard to grow them and say, hey, grape vineyard grower, let me put these on your grapes and kill them to understand their biology better. It's really hard. It's really hard to study them.
But there are people who are going to say, just spray them with insecticide.
Oh, yeah. We joke harsh language kills them. So that is an effective way to go about it. But if you think about it, how you time that is very challenging depending on what they're feeding upon. we don't want to go and you know, spray pesticides on everything out there, right? We don't want to hurt pollinators. We don't want to hurt beneficial insects. We don't want to just spread toxic chemicals everywhere. And so that's one of the challenges that we're trying to deal with. And then where you get a particular problem for grape growers is that lantern flies will persist in their vineyard throughout the year. And we actually don't even recommend additional insecticide sprays for the nymphs, because what they apply for Japanese beetle will do them in. That's fine. But later in the season is when grapes are close to harvest. And so we call that the pre-harvest interval. And so any kind of insecticide that you apply at that point can't be very long acting, because you don't want that to impact the grapes when they're harvested. And so what you'll see in these vineyards is that, you know, at that time of year, first couple weeks of September, lanternflies do this, to me, fascinating thing. They move and you see massive flights. If you're in New York City, you haven't seen that yet, I bet you're going to see it in the next couple of years. And so you'll get thousands or tens of thousands on one particular tree. And so for vineyards, you'll go into a vineyard and they'll spray a contact insecticide that'll knock them down and kill a bunch. And you'll walk through a vineyard and you'll see just piles of hundreds or thousands of dead lanternfly underneath every vine. It looks like they've mulched with lanternfly.
No kidding.
And more and more will keep coming in. And they just can't keep up.
And they're spreading, are they? I mean, we're talking about the Northeast, but I'm imagining that they're spreading throughout the country then.
Well, yeah, that's what we're worried about. I mean, we've been working with California since 2018, right? They came out to look at this. Basically, they've shown up dead on shipments to five other states that are not contiguous to Pennsylvania, including multiple times in California and Oregon. So we're really, really worried about the grape growing regions. And because their food preference is relative to what's around, right, they're going to have changing impacts as they spread.
I understand that we know from our friends at public radio station WESA in Pittsburgh, they told us about a story about a dog that's been trained to sniff out spotted lanternfly eggs.
Yes, I think that's really cool. So that's something that Pennsylvania Department of Agriculture has, but also it's a program that USDA is working on. And so the idea here is that you're not going to have them running through the forest, right, really looking at trees, but in terms of pulling over cargo trucks that are shipping things, how do you inspect a truck and make sure that there aren't lanternfly eggs on it? And so that's a really good use of sniffer dogs in terms of trying to find egg masses on shipments and prevent spread that way. So with this insect, because it goes through four different nymphal stages, an adult stage plus the AK stage, it's kind of like you have to think about those six different stages as it being a different animal in each stage. And so in terms of trying to prevent the animal that is the egg from moving on cargo, sniffer dogs seem to be a very promising route. We don't have any silver bullet. We just need a lot of tools targeted across each of those different stages.
This is Science Friday from WNYC Studios. Talking with Julie Urban, Research Associate Professor in Entomology at Penn State University and State College, Pennsylvania, talking about the plague. It's like one of the plagues of lanternflies. Okay, leave us with your best advice for squishing them successfully.
For squishing them successfully?
Yes. Okay. I mean, that's what we're told to do. Is there a technique, a method, a time in their life cycle, whatever, that's the best time, way to squish them?
Okay, for me, I like them. I would kill them, but not squish them. Frankly, rather than squish them, if you poke them in the rear end or you put a bottle over their head or some kind of container over their head, you can like get them to pop up into a container, like into an iced tea container, into a soda bottle, whatever, and throw them in the freezer. That's how I would do it. I wouldn't want to squish. You can get a lot that way.
Well, but you, now that you've got them in your freezer.
That'll kill them. That'll kill them.
Oh, I see. I see.
Yeah. Yeah. That way you don't have to, you know, be all violent.
That's okay. Good words, because yeah, I'm all for that kind of technique. How would you rate the attack of this bug with other historic bugs that have attacked us before?
It's different because, like, if you think about the emerald ash borer, you think about something that's you know, targeting trees, which this thing kind of is. Emerald ash borer or something like that is taking out species diversity. This isn't, right? This is kind of across, you know, gypsy moth will defoliate and it'll like just knock down and kill a lot of things. other than Tree of Heaven and Grape, nobody cares about Tree of Heaven. It's not really killing things. It's just more of a stressor in terms of its impact on the plants. And it's weird because besides the grape economic impact, this economic impact when it comes to transport of goods is where it can just hit so many different industries. Like I was sitting in a meeting at Pennsylvania Department of Agriculture and somebody in one of the early years, and they have an inspector that'll inspect like a certain percentage, 10% of the beehives that get shipped out of state because people raise beehives for pollination services that they'll sell to California. And they'll inspect those for varroa mites and that kind of thing. And they realize that like, oh my gosh, a lanternfly could lay its eggs on the underside of one of these beehives and get transported to an almond farm in California. And essentially now you just have a Trojan horse that you introduced there. And so now they have to inspect 100% of their beehives that leave the state. Like, holy cow. It's like things you don't think of. Milk trucks getting infested with egg masses on them.
And of course, if we're talking about going to California with all the grapes that are out there.
Exactly.
I mean, could we expect shortages or increases in the price of wine if this really gets moving?
I think so. I mean, I talk with people from California. I have funding from California right now. I mean, they're very proactive, but they're very worried.
We're just about out of time. I have one more question for you. What spotted lanternfly info do you want to leave people with before we go? What's the take-home message here?
I mean, maybe this is too nerdy, but for me, who's an evolutionary biologist who studies fundamental biology, suddenly like leading the national efforts on this. It shows the importance of studying the fundamental biology of species in their native range while their native range exists, because you just don't know when anything is going to be a problem. And you just better hope that somebody who is an expert is in the wings, you know, who can help solve the problem.
Julie Urban, Research Associate Professor in Entomology at Penn State University in State College, Pennsylvania. Thank you, Dr. Urban, for taking time to be with us today and all this great advice.
Thank you so much. This was a treat.